Blog Talk Radio.
Radio. I'm your host, Eric Burke. Tonight we have on David Means. He's going to be talking scrub pythons with us in just a little bit. But tonight we seem to have a scrub python curse. Last week I was sick. This week Owen is sick. So Owen will not be with us tonight. It'll just be me and David talking scrub pythons. A couple things I wanted to go over before David comes on. First, I wanted to tell Blake and Owen that they did an awesome job last week. The show was awesome, and that was one of the shows that I was looking forward to since the beginning of this whole thing. I put together this whole show on the idea of I wanted to hear more about scrub pythons, and the one show I've been looking forward to since October I missed. So I apologize to Blake, and just want to tell him that he did a good, great job. And I think he's going to come back on the 7th of January to talk some more scrubs with us because there were some more things that he wanted to hit on, and I'm sure that everybody out there that is into scrubs will want to hear some more scrub talk. So a couple things I wanted to talk about. One, I got a message from U.S. ARC, an email today on the vote no to the Python ban. There's a poll that they have. You can go over and vote on the poll. And pretty much what I saw earlier, it was 83% no and 17% yes. So go over there. If you're not a member of U.S. ARC, join up. You should definitely be a member to protect your rights. They are taking care of us on the front of all this legislation coming through. And what else did? And today was Hamburg, and that's pretty much where Owen got sick. He lost his voice down there. I guess he was talking too much carpet python talk. But apparently, the Maryland Moralia Mafia was there at the Hamburg show, and that consisted of Jason Balin, Mo from Mojo Reptiles, and Howard from Reading Reptiles, and they were there, and Owen was there, and apparently none of them left with any zebras, so disappointment there. Couple things I saw on the forum. One of the things I saw was a member by the name of Wayne Larks. He's from down in Australia. And I saw he posted up his orange Super Hypo Jag. I don't know if you've seen that over there, but go over on Morelia Pythons and check it out. He goes by Larks. That thing is pretty sweet. It's pretty much an orange jag with a few black specks all over that thing. Very, very cool jag. I guess they call it down there, they refer to them as a orange pepper line. I'm not really sure about that. But hopefully in the next couple months, we're going to be having some people come on from Australia, which will be very cool to talk carpet pythons with that. But tonight, we're talking scrubs. So without further ado, I'm going to bring on David. Hey, David, welcome to the show. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Great to be on the show.
Good, good. Good to have you. It seems that we start our show. We basically want to get a feel for you, and we want to know what got you into reptiles.
Well, I really don't know what got the bug started, but as I was a young child, I was always, you know, going out to lakes and rivers, catching little turtles and five-line skinks and such, and as a young teenager, I started keeping iguanas. I'll never make that mistake again. And then at the age of 15, I started volunteering my time at a local reptile store. It was a local breeder who was breeding about 32 species at the time and decided that since he was paying rent for a building anyway, he might as well open a retail store. So I spent most of my time there working with all different species of reptiles. Had some relatively rare species there, which was pretty cool for the mid-90s. It's where I got introduced to scrub pythons. That was one of the store pets. Was a probably about a 12-foot scrub. Can't remember the locality, but it was pretty cool, and that's what sparked the interest in scrubs for me. And then after working in that store, it just was like an explosion. Just was trying to work with any type of reptile I could get my hands on. Up until where I am today.
Okay. So what drew you to scrubs? What got you into the scrub python?
You know, I really don't know. Just, you know, experiencing them working at the reptile shop. It was just something unique about them. I really can't put my finger on it. But it was, you know, after the shop had closed up and moved away, it was something I always thought about, and it was actually several years before I got the chance to work with them again. I was managing a small pet store, and saw them come across the list, so I picked up one and worked with that for a short time, and then life changed for me a little bit, so I had to get away from reptiles, and then I started working with, did carpets for a little while and emerald tree boas and some colubrids, different locales of boa constrictors and stuff, and then the scrub opportunity came back, and so I jumped back in, sold everything that I had, and been working with scrubs ever since.
I see, like, a lot of guys that work with scrubs, and I think of, you know, I mean, the passion that you guys must have, because, you know, scrubs aren't the easiest to work with, and they can be very frustrating, I think, because they're not easy to breed. So I just see a whole lot of passion from guys that keep that. So what type of collection do you have as far as scrubs go?
Oh, it's really all I keep is scrubs. My daughter works with corn snakes, and my wife briefly worked with Hog Island boas. We still have a few of those, but I work solely with scrubs. I've got 3.2 Moluccans, 5.3 Tannenbars, 2.1 Biox, 10.12 Barnex, 1.3 Waminas. A pair of those are on loan to on loan with Blake. The other two females I have are patternless. And then a female Aru, which is also on loan to break with. On loan to Blake.
Okay. What about the patternless? Is that a morph, or is that just what do you know what's going on with them, or?
It is a morph, but I really don't have too much information. The larger one that I have originally thought was a patternless Southern, but after working with that animal for a while, I've started noticing many characteristics of the Wamina come out in that, so I'm pretty confident that's what that is. The other Wamina came in with a few Waminas that I'd picked up that were, of course, wild caught. Came in with, I believe, was its sibling, which was a patterned. But I don't have much information on those. I've just picked those up in the last, 8-10 months or so.
I think one of the things that I struggle with is how you guys pick out the different localities. And you know, you just said that, you know, after working with it, you noticed some different characteristics that made you think it was different than what you originally thought it was. What were some of those characteristics?
One of them, which I kind of went back and forth with, is it's got a solid pink tongue, which Waminas have. There's not many other scrubs that have solid pink tongues. And I can't really put my finger on it or describe it, but there's something with the eyes that I've seen in Waminas, and this has got the exact same characteristic. So with the pink tongue and that, and even though it's patternless, in between the scales it's got some black, which kind of looks like the spider webbing that the Waminas have. It, like I said, it's something that, you know, you kind of have to work with the different locales to be able to put your finger on. My best guess that it is a patternless Wamina. The younger one is definitely Wamina, but it's still relatively small. So I'm curious to see as that ages how closely it's going to resemble the older patternless that I have.
Okay. I wanted to maybe touch on a little bit of husbandry on how you keep your different scrubs. What the tents, what kind of caging, feeding, misting, etc.
Sure. Keep my scrub room at around 82 degrees in for summertime temps. I offer a basking spot of 92 degrees. Keep the humidity around 60-70%. I do miss the adults about one to two times a week, the smaller hatchlings and some of the juveniles, 2 to 3 times a week I'll miss those. With the caging, I'm a big fan of the older Neodesha caging. Keep my adults in the 8-foot flat front neos. Those are the ones that are about 30 inches deep and about 30 inches tall. And then I've got some smaller neo caging that I keep the juveniles in. Just recently picked up some of the Vision arboreal cubes. They're 2x2x2s, which I'm starting to really like. The younger animals, the hatchlings, I keep in 4-quart tubs, and I step them up through tubs for their first few years. Substrate, I'm a big fan of old-fashioned newspaper and paper towels. I will use the lab-grade shredded aspen from time to time, but for the most part, it's newspaper, and the younger animals I use paper towels with. Provide them with hide boxes and purchase when when I can, but with working with such a large collection of scrub pythons, I have found that with the adults, giving them purchase, it makes a makes it extremely difficult to clean the cages. It's hard to get them off of their perches when they're clenched on there tightly, and you really can't clean the cage or change a water dish with a scrub perched, an adult scrub anyway. I find it difficult. I guess you could use a shield of some sort, but I don't like to take chances, and I love keeping my cages super clean and keeping the water super clean, so it's important to be able to do that quickly without without getting tagged. It's also important.
Chuck is over there. I'm sorry. Chuck is asking me, he's over in the chat room on Morelia Pythons, and he's asking me if you've ever gotten bit by the bigger scrubs that you keep.
I actually have. I've been tagged by my 16-foot female Biak twice, and I've also been bit by Rain, the about 15-foot male Barnack that I have. And each one of those were love taps, as I'll call it. They weren't, you know, it wasn't a feeding bite, and it wasn't a tremendous defensive bite. I was extremely lucky in all three cases. But lots of blood, lots of pain. I don't recommend it.
Oh, wow. As far as you're feeding, what are you doing as far as feeding? Are you do you follow any set schedule or?
I'm not one of those guys that feeds on every 14 days or I mix it up a little bit. With the hatchlings, I start them out on usually live copper mice for their first few meals and switch them over to frozen and thawed as quickly as I can. Funny thing with scrubs, and when they're older, they'll eat literally anything. But as babies, they actually can be kind of hard to get started. Last year, I produced four clutches and had at least two of those clutches were extremely difficult to get going, and unfortunately lost several animals because they refused to feed. Did a little bit of force feeding for a time, but that scrubs are difficult to force feed. You can get the food item all the way down to their stomachs, and they'll regurgitate it right back up.
Really?
Yeah,
wow.
They're very stubborn. I've had luck using Campbell's Russian Dwarf Hamster pups. I had a few accept those and were able to switch over to mice later on with some scenting. And with some of the non-feeders, it got to the point after losing several of them, it became apparent that the rest of them were going to perish unless I found something that they would feed on. And as a last-ditch effort, I ordered some house geckos, and every single one of the non-feeders took the house geckos right off the bat. Of course, then I had the issue with the parasites, so I had to get those guys all wormed, and I'm still currently working on getting them to switch over to frozen and thawed mice. They are taking frozen house geckos, which helps out tremendously with the parasites. I'm able to take a frozen and thawed house gecko and lay it on top of a frozen and thawed hopper mouse, and they will strike at the house gecko and end up taking both of them at the same time, which gives them a little bit of extra nutrition. But with the hatchlings, I feed them roughly every 14 days. I don't feed them any sooner than every 14 days, but I may actually extend that out to 14 to 20 days, the juveniles, I'll feed a prey item roughly every 2 to 3 weeks. And the adults are taking a prey item every 3 to 6 weeks. And I usually only feed one prey item that will leave just, you know, just barely a visual lump in their body. Even my adult Barnecks and even up to the 16-foot Biak, you know, she may get a extra large to jumbo rat every 3 to 6 weeks. It's usually every, you know, four or five weeks. Sometimes I'll let it go 6 weeks, but rarely will it be every 3 weeks.
So why are you, what is your purpose for feeding that way? Is it for breeding, or do you feel that that's just what the animal requires?
Well, they will, a lot of it's for future breeding. I think that if you, and there's a lot of other scrub keepers that will probably agree with me on this, that if you have obese scrubs, you're not going to be very successful in breeding. It seems the, especially with the females, if they're obese, they will either fail to ovulate, or if they do, they'll usually slug out, or you'll have a high ratio of slugs.
Okay.
Personally, I feel that growing the scrubs slowly will increase their lifespan and also their breeding potential. I treat them more like you would emerald tree boas or chondros with their feeding. And a lot of that is due to, you know, in captivity, the prey items we're feeding are, you know, the prey items themselves are being fed very nutritious diets, and compared to what they'd be eating in the wild, which, you know, those animals are, of course, full of parasites and usually very lean themselves. So in the wild, they're going to be hunting more, expending more calories doing so, and the items that they do eat are lower in nutrition than what we feed in captivity. So it's very easy to get scrubs on the thick side if you're not careful. I believe that the lean scrubs make better breeders, and they also seem to live longer. And I think that goes with many different species of snakes. Unfortunately, I think majority of keepers overfeed their animals, especially with the larger pythons.
Now, do they have the bounce back from when they have a clutch? You know, how is that? Do they put the body mass back on quick?
Relatively. The females, soon after laying that clutch, will look pretty puny. You'll have a few little skin folds, but usually within about 3 feedings, they're bulked right on back up. They put on weight pretty darn quick after laying a clutch. It's actually kind of surprising.
And have you done back-to-back clutches?
I did one, but I think it's best to breed the scrubs every 2 years, give them a season off to kind of recuperate.
Okay. Now, if you were just getting into scrubs, what would be the best starter scrub python? What would you recommend?
The Barnecks are great southerns, but they do or potentially can get some size to them as adults. But the good thing is if you feed them correctly, in my opinion, you're looking at an animal that's going to take a while to get to that size. So you're going to be able to grow with that animal and kind of get a feel for the animal as it grows. The southerns are great. Any captive born and bred scrub would make a good starter if you've had some experience working with other Morelia. I'd stay away from the wild cult. If you have to have a scrub, and wild cult is the only thing that you can get, I would recommend getting it as close to hatchling as possible. I think the scrubs have a really bad rep, and a lot of that comes from most people's experience is they're getting an animal that's imported in the 3 foot plus range, and they're usually not very friendly. And you get tagged by one of those once or twice, and you're pretty much going to give up working with that animal.
Oh, man. Now, where would be the best place to get, you know, if you're going to get, you know, because there's not many bred in captivity, where's the best place to get that?
As Blake said, King Snake is a great place to start your search. Of course, I usually have babies here. I'm not always advertising. If somebody was looking for one, I most likely would have something here.
Okay.
Dan with DM Exotics bought most of my breeder Barnex, so he should be having a good season coming up. He should have plenty of baby Barnex next year. Dave Prada is actually getting out of working with snakes, so unfortunately you're not going to have him to go for. Hopefully Blake's going to have some success with the animals that he's keeping, so I would check with him. I believe Yasser still has some scrubs. He hasn't produced any in the last few years. I'm kind of hoping that he produces some here in the near future. I'd like to pick up a few more of those animals. I have a couple animals that he produced. Didn't purchase them directly from him, but through other people that purchased them from him.
So in the U.S. right now, pretty much you can get captive bred and born Barnex, but the other different subspecies are the ones that are more difficult to track down.
Exactly.
Okay. Okay. What about as far as, okay, so you get this new scrub, do you have any recommendations for trying to tame the scrub down?
Well, I hate to use the word tame with any large constrictor.
That's true, yeah.
Scrubs or any other large constrictor, I mean, you really need to respect the animal. Scrubs can get a pretty decent size, and I have found myself in a few hairy situations with some of the adult scrubs, so I think it's important to always have somebody else in the room that can help you out if you get into a sticky situation. The scrubs will use their entire body to hold on, and, you know, you get a coil around the neck accidentally. You know, the scrub's not intentionally trying to do anything, just hang on, but you can still be in danger. But
that might be trouble.
As far as getting a scrub where you can handle it, again, I recommend starting with the youngest scrub possible. Nine times out of ten with the babies, you're going to get tagged a few times. It's, you know, going to draw a few little drops of blood, but, you know, it only hurts for a few seconds. But after you get them and they are settled in, I recommend just handling them significantly, and they usually will calm down. I've got an animal here that I usually take around to the shows if I'm vending at a show, and my 12-year-old daughter handles this animal. It's a Barnex that was actually produced by Yasser at Spitfire. Extremely handleable snake. Never has offered to bite or anything. Still, again, you need to respect scrubs, and, you know, they do have some pretty long teeth and can give you a pretty painful bite. But, you know, that being said, as long as you respect the animal, don't do anything foolish like let your drunk girlfriend try to kiss it on the face. I won't go into that story. Wasn't me, but somebody else that keeps them. You should be okay.
That's probably not a good idea.
One of the things I've done. I've done a few times with the snakes, the scrubs that are a little harder to handle, is I'll put them in a snake bag, and while I'm watching TV, I'll have it sitting on my lap, and you know, we'll touch the snake through the snake bag a little bit, or as I'm working, you know, around in the snake room, I'll take the bag and tuck it under my belt and just let it kind of dangle there so that the snake gets used to your scent, the being moved around and stuff. I find that helps a little bit. But
okay.
Mainly just handling them.
Okay. Yeah, I have a pair of barnets that I got from you, and I know the one that I believe it was from Dave Prada.
Mm-hmm. That would
breeding
be the
That's the one that you worked with before I got it. And I was actually surprised because when I picked it up, I thought scrubs, you know, they had the – I have carpets that are meaner than that scrub.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was really surprised at that. So are they like carpets that after working with them and, you know, they seem to calm down a bit? Is that your experience?
I find that to be very true. It's kind of funny. I usually will give my customers the worst case scenario and almost probably scare them a little bit, but, you know, just give them a warning, you know, that baby's probably going to tag you a few times, just be prepared for it. And I've had snakes that literally have bit me putting them into the bag, and I'll get calls and emails from my customers, you know, weeks and months later saying, I don't know what you're talking about. You don't know what you're talking about. This snake is the calmest snake I've handled. So, you know, it's a funny thing, but I have found that the Prada animals do seem to be calmer in general. I don't know what that's all about. I've had a few clutches that I've produced that the hatchlings, I mean, literally reach in and take them out of their little tub and are fine. And I produced one clutch last year that every animal in that clutch will bite every time you take it out, and they haven't calmed down a single bit. Of course, I held those back for future breeders, so they don't get handled much. But one of the few snakes I've, you know, handled that you'll have it on one hand and it'll actually bite that same hand without any movement or anything. It'll just see one of your fingers,
right,
and just latch right onto it.
Wow. I'm looking over here in the chat room, and they're saying, and Chuck is saying that the pair he got from you also is super, super calm.
Yeah.
So he has the same experience.
Yeah, and I know, well, the animal that he got from me that I produced this year was pretty calm, straight out of the egg. You know, will strike when you first open the tub a little bit, but as soon as you get it out, I never had a single problem with that animal. That was a male. The female was from a clutch that was fairly calm, but I had been tagged by that animal a few times, but I had handled it quite a bit before I sent it off to Chuck, so I was hoping it would be nice and calm for him.
So what's your favorite type of scrub to work with in your collection?
My favorite scrub in the collection, I think, is Rain, my big male barnack. He's probably my favorite, and then close second would be my Bioc pair. Both of those animals are pretty cool to work with.
And if you could have any scrub that's not in your collection, what would it be?
It would have to be the Kinghorn Eye, the Australian scrub. It would literally, I think, would give my right arm to own a pair of those.
Do you think that they will ever become available in the States, or are they over in UK or anything like that? Is anybody working with them over there?
I've heard a few reports of a few animals being in the UK, and I believe also in Switzerland. I think there may be a pair or two. So I'm hoping that one day they will be available in the US, but I'm not holding my breath at this point.
Now, do they, I know they have them in Australia, do they have the same problems with breeding, do you know, as far as,
you know,
are they similar to the barnets?
I really haven't done much research in that area, to tell you the truth, so I really can't give you a good answer on that.
Okay. Is there anything other than scrubs that you'd work with? Is there any other Moralia that you would want to get into?
I've worked with several different species in the Morelia group, and I think scrubs are pretty much it. You know, outside of Morelia, I think the only thing, and, you know, of course, those are things that I'll probably never have the chance to work with, but would be Komodo dragons and king cobras, I think would be a cool species to work with, but I don't think that I'm brave enough to do that.
Oh, all right. That's on the wish list. Hey, fair enough. So you're one of the only guys that I know that has continuing success with breeding scrubs. So I wanted to walk us through what you do for breeding from the beginning to the end. What's the age and the size? What are you cycling? What's the temps?
Alrighty. Well, I think one of the big keys, as I've mentioned before, is keeping the animals lean. By far, I think that's the biggest thing you can do to have success. Females, if you feed them, you know, like I do, you can get them, of course, bigger and ready to breed probably faster, but you may not have the same success. But personally, females, I find to be ready in the 4 to 6 year age range, and I've had them in the Barnex go as small as 6.5 feet. Usually seven and a half is more ideal. Males, 3 to 5 years of age, and you know, 4.5 feet is a good size to start the males. Cycling, my summer temps in the room, the ambient temperature is 82 degrees, roughly, plus or minus, with a basking spot of 92 degrees. I keep the lights on in the room for about 14 hours. I start my cycling in the November to December range. I stop feeding usually about 2 weeks before I start cycling, just to make sure they get everything out of their system. I start dropping my temps by 1 degree roughly every 3 days, and I start cutting the lights back up by 3 minutes every day until the lights are on for about 10 hours a day. I drop the temperature down so that my daytime highs, ambient temperature is about 78 degrees, and I give them a basking spot for about 6 hours at 85 degrees with a nighttime low of around 70 degrees. Soon after I start to cycle them, I will introduce the male into the female's cage. I will leave him in there for around 3 days, maybe up to a week if I notice a lot of activity. If I don't notice much activity, then I'll shorten the time and take them on out and give them a little bit of a break. I've also had great success taking both animals out of their caging and putting them into a cage that they're not used to about an hour before the lights go out, and just about every time I'll notice some activity soon after the lights go out, just about every time I do that.
Okay.
I don't do anything special leading up to cycling as far as feeding. I don't, you know, as some people do, we'll pump the females up. I don't do anything like that at all. I don't feed when I'm cycling at all, at least in the beginning part of it. Again, you know, give the male a break of, you know, about 3 or 4 days, you know, in between being in with a female. And in the February to March period, I'll start bringing the temps back up by about a degree every 3 days, and the light's about 3 minutes a day until we're back to summertime temps and lighting. As I'm starting to bring the temperature back up, I will start feeding the females a very small meal weekly. And, of course, you're taking the male out of the cage while you're doing that. And give a chance for the scent of the prey item to, you know, get off the female, maybe give her a good misting so that that scent isn't there. Because I have had issues where introducing a male even a day after feeding and him thinking the female was a rat. Because, you know, of course, about that time they're starting to cruise. The males are really cruising looking for food. But I find that if you start feeding the males, then they lose all interest in breeding. So I don't start feeding the males until after the females have ovulated.
Okay.
And again, you know, females, I'll give them a small meal weekly until they ovulate, and then they'll usually stop feeding on their own. Occasionally, I've had a female take a small meal after ovulation.
Okay. And what type of time frame are you looking at from ovulation to prelay shed to egg laying?
From ovulation to prelay, you're looking about 28 to 35 days, in my experience.
Okay.
And after they've had their prelay, you'll start to notice that the female will spend a significant time in her lay box. I will take out her hide box and replace it with a lay box. I'll put some damp sphagnum moss in. The only thing I really do different with the lay boxes is I'll take a Rubbermaid box, usually black if I can find it, and I will cut out a square in the top or the side and put a piece of plexiglass in, and then tape the square that I had taken out on and use a tape as kind of a hinge so that I can, with a flashlight, peek in and check on the female. And usually I'll put the access hole for the female to get into the egg box in the side and not the top. That little window helps out a lot, because the females will be pretty defensive when they're in the lay box. So having that little piece of plexiglass in between you and the snake, that helps out. It's also really cool when they do start laying. You can watch that process if you're careful through that little window. And usually after you're looking at around 30 to 35 days after prelay for her to lay. I have found that in the weeks leading up to laying, some people have experienced the females inverting, usually underneath the basking area. I so far haven't witnessed that, but I've witnessed it with just about every female inside the lay box. They will invert, you know, up to 180 degrees in the lay box quite often, actually. And then you have the great fun of trying to take a clutch of eggs away from a mama scrub.
Yeah, I was just going to ask for that.
Usually what I'll do is I'll take the, with the lay box, which is a Rubbermaid container, I love the ones that have got the little latches on the side, and I'll flip that upside down so the top becomes the bottom.
Okay.
And I'll take a little piece of cardboard or something and tape it on the access hole real quickly before she realizes what's going on, and take the whole lay box out of the cage into a nice clear space. Usually the kitchen floor works nicely, and I will have the snake hook ready, and I'll take a towel or a sheet and toss over. I'll lift up the top and toss the towel or the sheet over top of the scrub and have a general idea where her head is and grab her, you know, slightly behind the neck carefully through the sheet. And it helps if you have a second person to kind of help guide her off of the egg. She will hold on pretty darn tightly while striking in every direction she can.
Oh man.
Easier with the small scrubs. The larger scrubs are a little more difficult. I did see a video on YouTube where Dan of DM Exotics was taking his clutch that he produced this past season away from the mother, and I wish it was that easy for me. I haven't been that lucky. In my experience, the females have been pretty darn vicious.
Wow. And how have you ever tried maternal incubation with scrubs?
I haven't.
You've been nervous.
It's not so much being nervous with, you know, the eggs take roughly 90 days to hatch at 88 degrees.
Okay.
And I just, with the, you know, of course, I don't feed during the cycling season. And, you know, they may get a few meals in before the ovulation, and then, you know, they'll have their pre-lay. And then, so you're looking at several months right there without a significant supply of food. Then to add another 3 months onto that, I think in captivity may just take a little too much of a toll on the female. I think it would just scare me too much with the chance of losing a clutch. It would be cool to witness, but, and in my opinion, in captivity, you know, I know that some people have had pretty decent success doing that, but trying to replicate everything, I mean, in the wild, the female's picking out her ideal location. In captivity, you're trying to replicate what you think is an ideal location for her, and she's going to choose, you know, what she can in captivity, which may or may not be ideal. So, like I say, it would be something cool to try, but it's just not for me.
Yeah, maybe that'll be down the road. I guess, you know, you go through everything and raising these guys up, you're saying it's taken, you know, 5 years, and you go through the cycle and you get eggs, and I guess, you know, you're at the finish line. You don't want to leave anything up for chance. Now, okay, so you're pulling the eggs, taking it off the female, you survived that. So how are you setting the eggs up?
I'm using food grade food containers, the nice clear polycarbonate. I usually use the half size containers. And last season I did find out some interesting information with incubating scrub python eggs. I used smaller containers than I had the previous season.
Okay.
And everything I will do is the food grade containers. I put about an inch and a half of perlite in the bottom of that, and I'll use a little, like, half or three-quarter inch PVC couplings, and then put the egg crate on top of that. I don't actually put the eggs directly on the perlite. I'm elevated above that.
Okay.
Incubate them at 88 degrees. You're going for the 90-day mark, so 2 weeks prior to the 90-day mark, I will drop the temperature by 1, maybe 2 degrees, but usually it's 1 degree. And last year, what I found was everything was going great. The first clutch started to pip, and I found that the scrubs were dying in the egg soon after pipping, or would, you know, come completely out of the egg and then soon after perish. So I started freaking out and ended up getting in touch with Tracy Barker through a friend of mine And
okay.
It seems that the scrub pythons produce a significant amount of heat. And I need to really, one of the things I want to do this coming season is get a really accurate thermometer and actually measure the temperature inside the eggs and actually on the eggs as they're incubating. But it's my belief that they will start producing heat a month, maybe more, before they start to hatch. And in that last week, I think that the heat in those egg boxes rises significantly. And what happened was is the temperature in there was higher than I thought it was, and the snakes were unfortunately passing away. As soon as I followed Tracy's recommendation, which was putting about half in the half-size containers, they're roughly 8 by 10 inches. They may be larger than that. I had 8 to 10 eggs per container, which I thought was
okay.
Was great. And evidently she told me you want at least half that in that size container. And as soon as I did that, every other egg hatched out perfectly. So
that's interesting.
Yeah. So like I said, if I get any eggs this coming season, I'm going to invest in a very accurate thermometer and record temperatures throughout the entire incubation process, again, inside the container and actually on the egg.
Okay. So speaking of that, you know, what projects are you working with this season?
Got a pair of Barnecks that I'm going to be hopeful to get a clutch out of. Got a pair of Tannin bars that are ready to go. The female is actually Dave Prada's female, who produced her last clutch was 18 or 19 eggs, which is a huge clutch for a Tannin bar, in my opinion. So I'm hoping to get something out of her this season. As with every season, my Biox, I'm hoping to get a clutch out of them. I'm hoping this year will be the year. Yeah, that's pretty much it. It's going to be a small season for me. I'm actually taking a little bit of a break from the breeding. I mean, I'm going to mess around with those a little bit, but I'm not going to put a whole lot of faith into those this year.
Okay. Are the Tannin bars, are they patterned or patternless?
The female has a slight hint of a pattern, but I would call her patternless. The male that I'm hoping is a patterned Zantic. The female is a Zantic.
Okay. Nice. Are you following the same approach that you do for your Barnecks for the Tannin bars, or are you going to try to do anything different?
I don't think I'm going to do anything different. I'm going to do about the same.
The same, right? Okay. I wanted to touch on you with maybe some tips you could, you know, which we sort of had throughout the show, is just some safe scrub handling. You know, these guys can get pretty big, and what are some tips for keeping yourself safe?
First and foremost, always hook them out of the cage. I would. Rarely have I actually reached into a cage to grab a scrub out. I don't recommend it at all. Every bite that I've taken from the larger juvenile and adult scrubs were from animals inside the cage. Had so far been lucky and haven't been tagged outside of the cage. So I do recommend hooking them out. Usually after you hook them out, you can handle them pretty easily. Again, you do want to respect the animal and don't let it get close to your face or anything like that. I'd recommend with the larger scrubs having somebody that's competent in the room with you in case you get into a situation. Other than that, I really can't think of anything off the top of my head.
Okay. What about, what are the, maybe we can touch on some of the different bloodlines that Barnex that are being worked with in the States. I know there's VPI and Dave Prada, which may be the same, I'm not sure. Can you touch on all the different types?
Dave Prada's animals, I'm not sure if they came from VPI lines. I think that they were imported animals that they've gotten. Of course, VPI worked with animals back in the mid-90s, I believe, early to mid-90s. A lot of those animals are still in collections. I own a few. Dan with DM Exotics is working with several different lines, including his own. He's got some VPI animals there. He did purchase, like I said earlier, most of my breeder Barnex. I believe Summit Reptiles produced a clutch or two. Yasser, again, he's produced several clutches. And myself. It's really the only people I know that have produced Barnex in the U.S. There may be others. I just haven't come across them.
Okay. What about the can you touch a little bit on the Halmahera pythons? What's your thoughts on those?
Let me back up just a second. Ted Thompson also produced some Barnex, and I actually bought his breeders from him, so I want to make sure to put his name in.
Okay.
The Halmaheras, I don't know a whole lot about them. Blake is probably the guy to really touch on those. Of course, they're the only python that hasn't been bred in captivity, as Blake mentioned in the last show. In my opinion, I think the key to that is getting some very, very young animals in, you know, hatchling or soon after hatchling animals, and growing them up slowly and lean, and then playing around with cycling them, I think is going to be what's going to happen. And I'm really hoping that Blake has success this season with the animals that he has. That would be pretty darn awesome.
That would be great. Yeah, that would definitely be good success. What about the Moluccan pythons?
Moluccans are a funny animal. From the best that I can recall from the little bit of research I've done, everybody that's produced a clutch has only produced one. They haven't been able to replicate that. And that's to the best of my knowledge. I could be totally wrong on that. There's, as Blake said, from the best that we can find, four clutches that have been produced in the U.S. A buddy of mine by the name of Mike Bell in Maryland produced a clutch last season, which was pretty cool, and he did it totally unexpectedly. He's got several animals that he's had for years and been trying to produce something, and last year he just kind of, you know, didn't do anything, just had the animals in there, came in, you know, went to clean the cage or change the water dish out one day, and saw eggs just kind of scattered throughout the cage, and found the female coiled around a few of them, and he actually got six animals out of that clutch, which was pretty daggone cool. We kind of went over what may have spurred that to happen, and I strongly believe that he had backed off of feeding significantly, and I think that it leaned the animals down, and my best guess is that's what why he had success with that. So that's what I'll be trying here. Hopefully next season I'll have two females that will be ready to go. So that's what I'm going to be doing, is keeping them nice and lean and seeing what happens.
Yeah, I hope you have success with this.
I sure do.
it would definitely be Awesome. So, let's see what else we got here. Do you keep, well, I know you keep a group, but do you keep them any different? I know Blake was saying about how he keeps them slightly different with no heat hotspot. Do you keep your Moluccans like that, or do you keep them with a hotspot?
I do offer them a hotspot, which they will take advantage of occasionally, but I do find that they will spend their time in the cooler areas of the cage and in the mid-range, but I will catch them occasionally basking. So I do offer them a basking area, and again, that's about 92 degrees.
Okay. I don't have anything else to hit on. Is there anything else that you wanted to hit on?
Not that I can think of, but I'm sure as soon as I hang up, like Blake, I can think, I'll probably think of all kinds of things. So we may have to revisit this in the future.
Oh, I know what I wanted to ask you about. The
sure.
I don't know if you saw it over on the on Morelia Pythons. They posted his name. I think his name was Castro. He posted up a picture of a sarong bear barnack,
mm-hmm.
and it had a reduced pattern. Did you see that one?
I may have seen that. I think I did. I can't remember a whole lot about the picture, but I think that they were thinking that was a. And I may be butchering the name of this. I haven't heard a lot of these locales ever pronounced before, but maybe a kofial, if I'm pronouncing
Kofi,
that correctly.
Yeah.
I believe that's what it is, but it's kind of hard to tell. The barnecks and many scrubs, and of course, with a lot of the Morelia in general, will be imported from a location, and that's usually how we give them their locale information, but they could be, you know, come from a completely different area. I know currently what we were calling Waminas and still do are now coming imported as Jayapura scrubs. So, you know, it's really, really hard to nail down some of these locales, and that animal is kind of shows characteristics of both.
Okay.
But my best guess would be it's a kofial.
Now, let me ask you this: do you think that these different localities could actually be subspecies of barnack, different species?
You know, I really don't know. It would something that definitely would be cool to research. It would be my dream would be to be able to go over and observe some of these scrubs in their natural habitat and, you know, get some more documentation. But of course, that takes lots of funds to be able to do. But it would be.
Well, if you get that together and you need a partner, let me know.
Sure. Have to play the lottery or something here, and we can't accomplish that. It's definitely a dream of mine because there's very little information out there. And, again, it would be nice to be able to travel around to these different locales and be able to say, okay, this is what these animals look like in their natural habitat and from these locales, this is what this animal looks like, and instead of all this guesswork that goes into it.
Right. So how can people get in touch with you?
They can email me at dvmeans@hotmail.com.
Okay.
My home phone is 540-829-9846, and I accept calls pretty much any time. If I don't answer, it's usually I'm asleep, so people are welcome to give me a ring anytime they like. I'm always up to talking scrub pythons. And
okay.
I'm a member on MoreliaPythons.com. I'm Go Topless on there, which I really need to change that screen name now that I don't have my convertible anymore. on other forums, I'm either Go Topless or David Means. So I can be contacted through private messages there as well.
Okay. Well, I guess that's all we have for tonight. I wanted to thank you for coming on and talking to us, and appreciate all the great information that you gave us. And we'd love to have you back on.
Sure, anytime. I appreciate the invitation to be on the show.
Okay. All right, David. I guess that's it. Have a good night.
You too. Thanks.
Thanks.
Bye.
All right, everybody, that was David Means. The show is going to be a little short tonight because we don't have Owen's bantering. And next week, we have Chris from Headhunter Reptiles on pretty much the top-of-the-line jungles, that the best you can get in the U.S. I mean, classic clean jungles. I'm going to pick his brain. And then after that, we have Michael Pinnell coming on. He has pretty much the top-of-the-line coastals in the U.S. And then after that, we're going to take a couple weeks off for the holidays, and then we'll be back with Blake on again to talk some more scrubs. Just want to give some quick shout-outs. As always, if you're not a member of the Morelia Python Forum, go over there, check it out, become a member. Pretty much everything you need to know as far as carpet pythons and all other Morelia species. Check out the Bush League Breeders Club as well, another cool site. They have a lot of different types of reptiles that you can get involved with over there. And I wanted to give a reminder to everybody to about the Morelia Python calendar. She's going to be, it's Kathy over there that's taking care of that for us. She's going to be going over the polls this weekend, and she wants to process the orders, and she wants them to have them out by X by Christmas. So if you did not go over to order your calendar, which I did not yet, but I will be, go over there and order it from her. She goes by Insomniac 101 over there on the forums. As always, you can check us out on Facebook, Morelia Pythons Radio at Facebook, the Facebook page, and then MoreliaPythonsRadio@gmail.com. If you have any questions, if you'd like to hear a specific guest, feel free to email us at any time there. You can contact Owen at Rogue Reptiles. His website is roguereptiles.com. I'm not really sure about his email address. He is over on the Morelia Pythons as well. And that's all I have tonight. I want to once again thank David for coming on. Appreciate all the good scrub talk and look forward to talking to Chris next week. Have a good night.